The other day, I was scrolling through Twitter, procrastinating after a hard day working. One Twitter thread in particular caught my eye, and I was so here for it. Heidi N. Moore is an editor in the business and finance space, both areas with potentially lucrative contracts for the freelancers who are in the know. Like, if you're a freelancer in that space and you know kind of what most people are getting paid or what you can ask for, you're usually doing well if you're smart about how you manage your freelancing career in that space. Anywho, Heidi spilled the tea on what writers should be asking in any niche that they're writing in, what they should be earning, expectations on scope of work as they are related to pay. And she burned the internet to the ground with these revelations, as well as the feelings of many people who are unexpectedly being pushed to reconsider their long-held beliefs about what they're being paid, how they are being complicit in undermining their own earnings, and what the reality they were living in was basically like how that reality was keeping them broke. Ms. Moore also shared the businesses, many very well known, that way underpay their writers, wanted free work in exchange for publicity. Honestly, I can't pay bills with publicity, and so much more. I'm going to share my thoughts on this topic. Sorry, guys. And my own underpaid and undervalued moments. And then I'm going to end with 20, yes, 20 tips on how you can own your freelancing process and advocate for yourself during that process. You guys, no more free work. And you don't know what you don't know. Let's talk. Freelancers, it's time to know your worth. This show is sponsored by the 10KVA, a course for those of you interested in becoming a virtual assistant. If you're interested in doing that, check it out. Kayla Sloan runs this course. She makes an average of at least $10,000 a month as a virtual assistant. Learn from her, become a part of her tribe, also gain access to her job resource connections. So it's an incredible resource. It's so amazing. I've heard from business owners who use her virtual assistants and they love them. So check that out. Also, grab your ticket for the Money on the Mountain retreat. Looking for a space to talk about money from the financially single woman's perspective? Take some Groove 3 dance class, have some drinks, and just be around some cool people this weekend in Denver, Colorado, October 4th through the 6th. We're going to be talking about money from that perspective. Hope to see you there. The next retreat won't be until most likely spring of 2021. First, I want to make it very clear that I've wholly been underpaid for the work that I've done for other people, and it pains me to admit the following. I didn't trust my gut when it felt like I should be paid more. And then I would think at least I got this job, and then I was quote unquote lucky to get it. I was desperate for cash, and that desperation dictated my freelancing actions. I didn't know the earning standards for the space that I was writing in. Trust me, I do now. I didn't know that not having enough of a financial buffer would be such a big problem. It became, and it was. Lack of confidence in my own expertise, imposter syndrome, affected my ability to advocate for myself. Lack of earnings diversity was a huge problem. I didn't have enough cash coming in from other revenue streams. That placed a lot of stress on me to take whatever I got. Here are some examples of projects I said yes to when I should have said no. Listicles. Okay, I used to get paid $15 a post to write those listicles. You know, those posts sharing the 17 best blah, 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 or the 21 best blah, blah, blah. While they aren't hard to write, they can actually be pretty time consuming to do, especially if you have to find links to the different things that you're talking about. So if you're writing a post about business tips or food or shoes or whatever, and there's 20 tips, typically you're finding a link per tip. And so that takes time. And so $15 for a listicle was insane. If it was easy to do and not time consuming, wouldn't the organization just have someone tasked to do that? Exactly. So they got me to do it because I was foolish enough to say yes and desperate enough, quite frankly. The $100 book editing job. Yes, you can laugh at this one. I do. I said yes to this project after returning from Australia, and I was basically taking anything that came my way. It was a digital book that ended up being much bigger than I thought. Like, I don't know. I just had this idea, oh, it's a digital book. It'll just take me like a day. No, it didn't take me just a day. In fact, it ended up being a highly technical book, many, many pages for a digital book. It was crazy. And by the time I was done with that project, I was probably earning a penny an hour. A penny. It took me 5 weeks to do it easily. And I said yes to $100. I also kept a bad client for well over a year after the time that I should have fired them. And the reason why was I didn't have enough clients to fire them. And I got in this weird thing where I just didn't onboard more. I was dissatisfied apparently with the status quo. That bad client, ironically, the people were lovely people, but they were horrible in business. And their expectations for the writers really didn't match what we were being paid. Also, they paid late. And it was more the second year that I was with them, but they just started paying people late. And I was just like, I just can't be a part of this. Like I can't depend on something that isn't dependable. So I'm going to share 20 tips on how to avoid freelancing hell and avoid this kind of stuff. It's so easy, but people need to tell you, like, how do you know if you don't know? So that's why I'm sharing this episode today. First, you need to have clarity on the role of your freelancing work in your overall income stream. So you need to ask yourself some questions. Like the first one would be, what is the minimum I need to be paid per project? And what's the minimum I need to be earning per month? What is this money for? So some people are freelancing just to pay off debt or to buffer their savings or just to live in general. How you approach that money depends on what you need it for, right? So if I were just side hustling and I was freelancing to side hustle, how I thought about that versus I'm living as a freelancer, it's very different. Understand what you're bringing to the table for your clients. So this is so important. As a freelancer, what do you bring? You're not an employee. You're a contracted person doing a task. So if someone contracts you to do a task, what does that mean? Does that mean that you're timely? You're excellent at communicating with your clients? Do you do well-researched and edited posts? Are you sharing your life? Is your expertise related to your life experience? Do you have an extensive amount of education, both real world or literal, you've gone to university for the topic that you're covering, or maybe you've lived in the space or the place that you're talking about? So I have a website and podcast about Colorado. I am likely going to be pitching to write posts and work on projects related to Colorado. Well, because I have all this expertise, it helps me to not feel like an imposter and also to negotiate better from the position that I'm an expert. So you need to spend some time kind of working on that so that when you reach out to potential clients, you can clearly state why you'd be great for them. How many clients do you need to have at any given time? Then add three more to that number. You need to ask yourself this. Add at least three more because that's going to push you to onboard more people and just be in that process. That process should always be ongoing, by the way. You need to have conversations with other freelancers in your niche. Since I tend to write in the personal finance space, I've had numerous conversations with other writers about different organizations that they work for or that they've worked for. Let me be clear, we all spill the tea. So if you're contracting writers in the personal finance space in particular, be warned, the tea has been spilled. We know what you're paying. We know how you communicate with people. We know when you're shitty, pardon my French. So like be clear, in personal finance in particular, we all talk. Have a strategy, freelancers, related to your lower paying jobs at the beginning of your freelancing career. It's not unusual, like with any career, that you're going to start at the lower end of the pay scale. It's totally normal. But that doesn't mean you stay at the lower end of the pay scale. It just means that that's where you started. Pick those jobs, understanding the role that they'll play in your portfolio. Do they position you as an expert? Do they tag your website? Like, do they do something that would make a potential client be like, wow, that's pretty awesome. I want to work with this person. If you're currently working a 9-to-5, you have a lot more flexibility in terms of saying yes to free or low paying work. If you're building a portfolio, guest posts for other well-known bloggers, or venues, if you will. And if you have a blog, that's part of your writing portfolio. Don't forget that. So you can really create some amazing work on your own blog and have that shine. If you're not working for whatever reason, the role of your freelancing work is very different. I would say that you do need to add side hustles to diversify your income and relieve some pressure from your freelancing focus. Side hustles will motivate you in many different ways, but they're also a time suck. Some side hustles to consider, brand ambassador work, focus groups, convention center work, they're all pretty easy to pick up depending on the size of your town. They're flexible and you can kind of say yes and yes or no depending on what your schedule is like. Likewise, you could also do virtual assistant work, could do social media management. You just have to really think about how your time is, what your cash flow is, and then kind of proceed from there. Know your budget and add 40% to it. You just have to. Always be onboarding. Basically, you have to create a mechanism in your business where you're always adding new clients. This is specifically for freelancers who are full-time. You cannot survive without clients. So if you're not always doing something to constantly onboard them, then it's going to create a problem sooner or later. Track your earnings. What isn't measured doesn't grow. Diversify your earnings. This diversity comes in several different ways. Number of clients, topics that you're an expert in and can work on. Do you have a service, sell a product, coach clients? No, you probably should rethink this. If you have a podcast or website in addition to doing your freelancing stuff, do you pitch for sponsors or accept pay for sponsored content? Do you share your favorite affiliates? Do you have a self-published book? Do you work on growing ad revenue to your site? Basically, grow some other income streams because sooner or later, you're going to really be thankful for that. I can't tell you how much I love my passive income from my ebooks, from my affiliates, from my event. By the way, the event income is not passive at all. Like none of that income is passive in the beginning. But my point is it eliminates a lot of pressure because I have income coming in from different places. Always be marketing. This is the flip side of always be onboarding. Share what you do in person. So if you're networking, what have you, always share what you're doing and that yes, you're available to work on a project. Share on social media via cold pitches, LinkedIn, which, you know, that's just businesses looking for people to work. So that's the area where you should be focusing. People cannot hire you if they don't know what you do and that you're ready to work with them. Grab testimonials from happy clients. Use services like Contently to build out your portfolio. Build in raises each time you sign on a new client, even if it's just $25 more, because then you'll kind of work that muscle for asking for more. Create an onboarding process. This one's huge. So freelancing was a really frustrating process for me because even though I enjoyed the work, I found that the client side of freelancing drove me nuts. It really did. And so one day I was talking to my friend, Sarah Lee Kane. She makes well over $100,000 a year now as a freelancer. In fact, she just hit $100,000 in the month of September for 2019. Okay. And I remember the year, it was like 2 years ago, she's like, I'm going to make $100,000 doing this. So I remember when she declared that she was going to do that. And she did several different things. I feel like I need to interview her again and have her on Michelle's Money Hungry to kind of share her story because it's so interesting and not that complicated. That's the thing. But she gave me some insight into what she did and continues to do to be a successful freelancer. And one of her key actions is having a client onboarding process where she gets clarity on the following: their scope of work for the project that you're working on, the client's writing expectations, payment terms, like when and how, just anything that she feels like is important for her to know in order to do the job well. That way, there's no confusion. In fact, this year I had an issue with a client because of communication. And if I'd had an onboarding process, I would have avoided that issue. I'll talk about that in a second. Don't take any projects that have a longer than 30-day payment term. You did the work. Everyone else gets paid on time. Why not you? So if they're like, oh yeah, we're going to pay you in 90 days, they better be like, why? Like, why is that? Why is it that their regular staff gets paid every month, at least every 30 days? So see if it's possible to renegotiate that because that's just crap, to be honest. So those are projects that I just won't take. In fact, even in brand ambassador work, there are companies known for doing that. And the reason why is they're floating their cash. They're moving their cash around a little bit. So just say no to that and just keep it moving, because there will be people who will pay you as soon as you submit your work, or they'll pay you every 2 weeks, or they'll pay you once a month. But most people can't be waiting for their money. And part of you advocating for yourself is you have to have boundaries and clarity on what you'll say yes or no to. For me, it's a hard no. Anything beyond 30 days, bye. I don't have time for that. You need to be clear about the company's communication protocol. How responsive are they to emails? Just ask your editor, hey, if I email you, what should I expect in terms of a return to, you know, a response to that email? If they're like, like 2 to 3 days, then you know it's 2 to 3 days. Likewise, you need to communicate how you are with emails or calls or what have you, so there's no confusion. Understand how your company is funded. So if they balk at you at paying you $200 for your post, you know it's bull and maybe you need to move on. Acknowledge your money mindset. One thing I found really interesting on Heidi's Twitter thread was how a lot of money mindset issues came out. It was so fascinating. No, you do not deserve to be underpaid because you're working for some special magazine or website. That's bull. And as a woman of color, to be honest, that was a huge thing that I struggled with, was the whole idea of underpaying, or rather under earning. And so being underpaid and under earning are, they're like brother and sister. So if you're very comfortable with being underpaid just because you're working with some kind of special topic or special community or whatever's going on, you need to reflect on that in your overall life. And finally, make sure that you ask if there's room to be compensated more. Like when you're saying yes to projects, you don't have to immediately say yes to what they offer you. You can negotiate. But when you do that, like when you ask, can the company pay a little more? We're adults. So I don't want you calling me, emailing me or whatever, being like, oh my God, Michelle, I didn't get the job. Because I'm going to tell you, if you negotiate, if you try to ask for more, or rather, if you ask for more, three things are going to happen. You don't get the gig. You should always be onboarding. And hopefully that won't be a big deal. It might be irritation, but at least you know that you asked, right? The second thing that could happen is they say no, but you decide to still move forward with the organization. I hear that happens fairly often. It just depends on you. The third thing that happens is the company will say yes and you earn more. And I've heard that happen just as frequently as the other. So what do you lose by asking? Be 100% unapologetic about advocating for your own best interests. More often than not, you won't have people like Heidi and Moore, myself, and others advocating for you. It was shocking to me that she was so candid, actually. Not in a bad way, but in a refreshing, like, thank you, Heidi, for spilling the tea. Like, we talk about it behind closed doors, writers, but this was so important. My position is very different now because I've diversified my income so successfully, I feel, at this point. Like, I write books. I get affiliate income. I have event income, even though technically all of that's going to the event. I have all these different things I have course income. So I have all these different things that I'm doing. And some of them pay more at different times of year. Some of them aren't paying as much as I would like. So like my course, I love my course. It's a really good course, but I haven't marketed the course enough for my liking. So moving forward, I'm going to be growing my course, Make Money with eBooks, and really focusing on growing the income with that. But because I know I've sold it before and sold, you know, enough to know that it's a product that people want, I know that I can grow the earnings. My point is, I no longer have the pressure of just the freelancing income. I have these different areas that I can focus on every day, every week, and that helps to balance out all the things that I'm doing, working on, and decisions that I'm making. I want you to do the same. I want you to focus on doing those things. I actually was looking at Twitter, like Twitter was really interesting to me this whole week. And there was a woman that I now follow. I'm not going to say her name, okay? Just because I don't think that's good. So I'm not going to say her name, but she was part of a very, very, very well-known media outlet. And I think that something came up and she was not asked to work for that company again. Something happened where she basically, it seems like from her tweets, she's blackballed in some sort of way. And you can kind of tell that this is a very scary time for her. And given her platform and given her expertise and given her that, like, the people that she knows, I kept thinking, oh my God, like, there's so many things that she can do and she can share with people that make money that are separate from client-based work. I don't know her, so I can't even comfortably reach out and be like, hey, have you considered trying this, where you don't have to wait for other people to pay you, but you run a workshop or a webinar on this thing and you get paid for it, right? I really need for you guys in 2019 and 2020 and 2021 and so on and so forth to think about all the things that you can do and all the actions that you can take so that you are in the driver's seat, so that you are taking control over what's happening to you. I hope you enjoyed the show today. I just can't believe that it's fall. It's going to be October. Holy crap. If you enjoyed the show, make sure to subscribe and like, and I look forward to sharing more content moving forward.